If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference, this show is for you.
Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
I had a friend of mine that was much more into marketing than I was and said, hey, I just came back from this convention. Here's the word of the day. And I'm like, well, what is it? And he goes, podcasting. And I go, what's a podcasting? And I remember Googling it at the time. And I think there was a page, maybe a page and a half. There was almost nothing on it.
As we celebrate National Podcast Day, there's no one more familiar with the ins and outs of podcasting than Dave Jackson. Dave is the founder of the School of Podcasting, and as a podcast consultant and coach, he has helped hundreds of people launch successful podcasts since 2005. Dave's Morning Announcement podcast is considered to be the original podcast about podcasting, and his schoolofpodcasting.com website offers all kinds of free tips and tricks for being a successful podcaster. Dave, I'd love to start with a little bit about your background before we get into podcasting. What do you remember best about your growing up years that led you to become a musician and a teacher?
Well, that's a good question. Probably my brother. I'm the baby of the family, so my brother was older, and so I just thought my brother was cool because he was older, and he played the guitar, so I wanted to play the guitar. And pretty much since about the age of five, I tried. I tried when I was 5 years old, and my fingers just weren't big enough. And so in the process over the years, you know, he would go to work. I remember when he was 16, and I would instantly jump on his guitar and just bought a bunch of books and taught myself. And I think I've always just had that kind of mentality of just wanting to learn new stuff. One of the great things about being a musician is you're always a work in progress. And so I've always kind of had that mentality of, you know, things can always get better. There's always new technology, new things changing in the world and things like that. So I've always kind of had that mentality of wanting to constantly improve. And I think it just kind of led to me becoming a teacher. My original degree was in electronic engineering, and I was a technician. And but that just didn't work because everybody I dealt with was upset because their stuff was broke. And so when the company I worked for said, hey, you have a technical background, but we need somebody to teach some of this technical stuff. What do you think? And I was like, oh, I'm in. So as soon as I started doing that, I knew that, wow, this is a great combination of my passions of being kind of geeky and yet helping people at the same time and being creative. Being teaching is, any kind of teaching is creative because you're finding new ways to get the light bulb to come on.
Geeky, creative, and teaching sounds like the perfect mix for podcasting as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you first become aware of podcasting?
I had been doing a newsletter for musicians, and because I was teaching people, I've been teaching people computers for over 20 years, and so at the time, I was teaching a program called Microsoft Front Page to certain people, and it was all about building a website, so I'd started building websites for people, and was kind of getting involved a little bit with internet marketing. This is back in the days of like MySpace. This is like 10 years ago. And I had a friend of mine that was much more into marketing than I was and said, hey, I just came back from this convention. Here's the word of the day. And I'm like, well, what is it? And he goes, podcasting. And I go, what's a podcasting? And I remember Googling it at the time. And I think there was a page, maybe a page and a half. There was almost nothing on it. And when I finally kind of pieces party one together, because he said, this is going to be huge. And I was like, really? And he goes, yeah, we're talking like MySpace huge. And again, telling you how long ago this was. So when I finally got enough, you know, I almost like, you know, paper clips and rubber banded one together because there just wasn't much around. But I actually uploaded a file and then saw it come down in another piece of software. I went, oh, and the light bulb came on. And I went, this is going to be cool. And so that was it. His name was Dylan Benjamin. He used to run a website called MP3 Postcards. And I don't know whatever happened to him. He kind of fell off the planet. But I would like to find him and go, thank you for introducing me to podcasting, because it's just become my ultimate passion at this point.
And at this point, you have I counted correctly, 3 podcasts, 2 books, about 4 different websites, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah, it kind of keeps, that's always changing, because I'm the kind of guy that I will throw it on the wall and see if it sticks. I've had some podcasts that have had great success. I've had others that have made about 6 episodes before I go, yeah, this is not going to work. So, yeah, I'm always talking, writing, recording. The joke is, you know, when Dave's not podcasting, he's, and then you pause and go, oh, well, who are we kidding? Dave's always podcasting, so.
How do you manage your time to be able to manage those podcasts and figure out what works and what doesn't?
One of the things I had to do, because I also have a wife and 3 great stepkids, is I literally had to separate work and home. I actually work in an office about 4 blocks from my house because if I was near a computer, I would go in to check my email for 15 minutes and come out about an hour and a half later. And it sounds weird. I actually work less hours than I probably did back then. But when I have certain days that my wife says, oh, is this a Dave Cave night? And usually for right now, it's Mondays and Thursdays and then a little bit on Saturday. And so what I do is during the week, I use different programs. There's a great free program called Asana. It's A-S-A-N-A. If you throw a .com on that, you'll get it there. But it's a great project management tool. And so I know when I show up, I just pull that up and be like, okay, here's everything I need to edit, or here's what I'm going to record, or any ideas that I've had for new episodes. So when I do show up on those days, I am ready to go. And so that's the biggie. And I use technology to have ideas come to me. There's a great tool called Feedly, Feedly.com. And that allows me to subscribe to as many blogs as I want in one place. So I pull up that one program, and it goes out and checks all these sites on media, new media, and podcasting, and gear, and everything like that. And I just scroll through the headlines, and if I see something, I can kind of pull it aside and save it. And then I know, you know, when it's a night to be in the office, I'll go through those and figure out, is this kind of the content that my audience would be interested in? And so that's some of the stuff. I use a lot of technology to keep up to date and to stop things from falling through the cracks. I use a program to do customer support that, you know, like a ticketing system. So just using as much as I can to be as efficient as I can.
Asana.com and Feedly.com are those two resources you've just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
After you'd first cobbled together your first podcast, Musicians Cooler, if I'm not mistaken, how did you grow it from there?
Well, I lucked out. The Musicians Cooler was a newsletter before it was a podcast, so I had about 1,000 people reading the newsletter. So when that one kicked off, I kind of got a kickstart. But anytime you start a new podcast, it's if there was a big giant switch, boy, I wish we could find it because everybody wants 10,000 downloads, you know, tomorrow. And it really boils down to, number one, you have to figure out who your audience is. Then you kind of have to go there, you know, wherever they are. Go out and mingle in your community, which you should be doing anyway because that's going to be great content for future episodes. And everybody loves to skip step three, and that is build a relationship with them. Talk to them and deliver value. Because if I start talking to people and they go, well, this guy seems to know what he's talking about, and then I get to step four, which is, oh, yeah, by the way, I have a podcast. Well, now they want to go hear it because they're like, yeah, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. But everybody wants to swap and go step one, figure out who my audience is. Step two, go there. Step three, tell them about my podcast. And that doesn't work because they go, who are you? So you kind of have to make sure to build that relationship and then tell them about your podcast. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, but they're great little tools. I remember back in the day, I made like a sample CD of just like 4 or 5 quick snippets of the Musician's Cooler, and I had these CDs printed up that said free music tips on the top, and then it had my website at it, and I talked to the guys at Guitar Center here where I live, and I would just go in and drop off a stack of 20 and put it right there at the front door by all their free magazines and stuff, and I would go by about every 2 weeks, and sure enough, the CDs would be gone. And so, and of course, at the end of that CD, it was like, if you like this content, oh, by the way, here's my website, and I would direct them back to that. So there are all sorts of little things you could do. I have business cards set up that aren't so much about contacting me, but if I find somebody and I think, oh, yeah, you sound like you would enjoy my podcast, here it is, here's my website, here's my tagline and my logo, and oh, yes, I'm available on iTunes and Stitcher. So I have cards made up for potential listeners, as well as if somebody needs to contact me, I have a separate card for that. So in the same way that I'm constantly looking for content, I'm also in constant promotion mode. So I'm always looking for ways to find out where my audience is and connect with them.
You mentioned what worked and what didn't. What have you found doesn't work for you other than being really quick and saying, yeah, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to get 1 million downloads and make $1 zillion?
Yeah, I learned the hard way that you have to connect with people first. If we go back 10 years before there were things like Facebook groups and Google Plus groups, there were forums. And I remember probably 2006 at the time, there was this great forum, and it was all these people that were in radio and broadcasting. And I seriously walked into the forum and said, you know, hi, I'm Dave Jackson. I run the School of Podcasting, and here's my latest episode. And I got banned instantly for spam because that brought no value. Nobody asked me about my podcast. And I went, oh, ooh, there's a little lesson learned. So that doesn't work. Just walking in and saying, hi, listen to my podcast. If I'd gone in and contributed to some conversations that they were having and maybe provided some resources, then they might have wanted to hear about what I had to say. But to just walk in and say, hi, listen to my podcast, that usually doesn't work. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that just blatantly didn't work. If you try to have a podcast based on input from your audience, I tried that once. I did a podcast called The Dates from Hell Show, where I thought people would chime in about, hey, I had this one date and it was horrible. My wife and I did it together, and we had about, I don't know, 5 or 6 stories, and we blew through those in the first few episodes, and we thought, well, the audience will chip in, and we forget the number one fear among humans is speaking in public, and we were asking them to do that. Not only that, but kind of humiliate themselves and talk about a really weird story they had. And then number three, the thing that people forget is when you first start out, you don't really have an audience yet. And so that was a great idea. We had all sorts of, we were going to direct people to things like Match.com that had an affiliate program and all sorts of other ways that we were going to monetize it. The only thing that we were missing was this lovely thing called content. And so after about 6 or 7 episodes, we were really trying to find any resource for that kind of content, and nobody wanted to share it. So that was we threw that one on the wall. It didn't work, and we went, okay, well, we've learned that one. Don't expect to get your content from your audience when you first start out.
And that's a great lesson, because I would have thought that would have worked really well, too.
Yeah.
How did you first come to create your school of podcasting once you had your podcasts out there?
I had, I was building websites, and I was kind of dabbling in internet marketing and just internet tools, basically. And at the time, everybody was saying, man, membership sites, so this is the next big hot thing. Everybody's going to get a membership site. And at the time, I was actually going back to school. And I thought, well, I'm going to need a job that's going to help pay for school, but give me flexible hours. And so I thought, well, maybe I can get a membership site that's going. And then this podcasting thing came along. I thought, well, supply and demand is still in effect. I should be able to create a membership site. And as this podcasting thing takes off, people are going to need somebody to show them how to avoid all the common pitfalls. And so I did some quick research on the internet to find out what the best membership scripts were, threw one on the website, and along the way, as I learn stuff, it goes into the school of podcasting. And the great thing is, as more and more people sign up, now I'm getting a broader spectrum of other tools that are available. We've started a Facebook group that there's a lot of networking going on. So you have the step-by-step tutorials that have always been there. You also have little old me to answer your questions via email. We also do a monthly kind of a open hours kind of thing where we just all get together and ask questions and network via voice. And like I said, then we have the Facebook group. So it's just kind of started, and it's grown and grown and grown, and it just keeps getting better and better.
As a teacher, what do you consider one of the most important things you've learned from School of Podcasting in the last year or so?
Boy, that's a good one. Number one, don't forget that podcasting is a global audience. So there are times when I have to make references, and I can't just say, yeah, you can find one at Best Buy. Because here in the U.S., everybody knows what a Best Buy is, but in the U.K., maybe not so much. So at times, you have to find resources that will work both for, you know, the U.S. audience, which is where I'm based, but also, you know, other places that might need that. And likewise, realize that there are times when I answer questions late at night because somebody just wrote in because they're in Brazil and it's, you know, 3 p.m. and it's 11 o'clock at night my time. So at times support gets a little tricky because I can't offer support 24/7, even though podcasting is 24/7. So there's, when you join the School of Podcasting, you realize you'll usually get an answer within 24 hours, if not sooner, but you know, it might not. I might be in bed when you first send off that email.
And that's an important thing to remember. I personally love a lesson that you taught recently when you talked to Rob of Rob Has a Podcast, which seems to be, it's okay not to be perfect. How do you draw the line between your musician, you're constantly learning and improving, and being over-perfectionistic with podcasting?
That can be tough. If you have a perfectionist bone in you, it can be really, really tough. I always tell people, listen to your podcast where your audience is more than likely listening to it. So for me, I listen to a lot of podcasts in the car, I listen on the treadmill, and I listen in the grocery store a lot, or if I'm out and about. And you might be sitting in your office going, oh, I can hear the hiss or the buzz on the musician's cooler. I used to obsess because I could hear the fan of my computer in the background. And I would talk about it on the show. I'm like, I'm really sorry about this. And finally, your listeners become your friends after a while. And the one guy just sent me an email and said, Dave, I love your show. I've been listening to it. I have no idea what you're talking about with this noise. And can you please move on? And so it was like, okay. So that was something where you have to realize, because it is a work in progress, your first podcast, no matter what you do, when you get to your 100th podcast, you're going to go back to your first one and go, you know, because it's just, you don't have the confidence. You're not used to talking behind the mic maybe as much. And just like anything else, you're going to get better at it the more you do. So there are times when you just got to jump in the water. So, because otherwise you'll never put anything out. A friend of mine, Daniel J. Lewis, who does the Audacity, the podcast, his first podcast, he used to write them out, like script them out. And I think his first year he put out 9 whole episodes because he just was obsessive about it. And he has since learned that's just not a good way to go. So he's a good friend of mine, and that was a lesson he learned. Yeah, it doesn't have to be perfect.
And in fact, that's a lesson a lot of us are continuing to learn. I heard you speak with Daniel J. Lewis at New Media Expo about crazy big tips for getting your podcast out there. I'm going to ask you for a crazy big tip of what to do and what not to do with podcasting as we celebrate National Podcast Day.
Well, what to do would be, number one, start. There's a great quote, and I'm hoping I can remember it, is you don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to be great. And that's from a guy named Les Brown. And so many people get paralysis by analysis. They have to get the right microphone, and they have to do this, they have to do that. And again, eventually, you're going to change things. You might change your format, whatever it is. But you can improve what you don't start. So that would be my first tip. And then what not to do, and this is from the guy that wrote the book More Podcast Money, don't get into podcasting solely for the idea of making money. You have to have a passion for your topic, and especially if you want to make money quickly. What you actually make money with is the relationship that you build with your audience, that you then, when they know, like, and trust you, then you can either make your own products or refer other products or things of that nature. But I see people that have said, I just lost my job. I'm so glad I found your website. How do I start making money right now? And I'm like, it just doesn't happen that way. So that would be something to kind of avoid. Not to say that you can't make money with a podcast, because you can. It's not going to happen overnight.
When people do start making money with a podcast, how are they doing it usually?
There's a lot of different ways. The easiest way is if you have your own product, and now you can create your own book with, you know, Microsoft Word and Amazon Kindle. If you have a huge audience, you can actually get sponsors. I make a fair amount of my income from affiliate sales, so where you basically can refer people to Amazon, or many products will have their own affiliate program. And what it is, it's kind of like online commission sales. So, for instance, if you go to schoolofpodcasting.com/MPR, that's short for My Podcast Reviews, that will direct you to My Podcast Reviews. And if you sign up through that link, that's a special link that only I have. And in this case, Daniel J. Lewis, again, another friend of mine who made that service, will pay me a small commission if you sign up. So that's basically affiliate sales. And the key to that is finding products that fit your audience. It doesn't do me any good to refer people to a great knitting kit, because nobody in my, you know, podcasting people, maybe not a lot of knitters in that group. So you can't just refer people to anything. And I usually say for affiliate marketing, refer things that you use. So in the case of My Podcast Reviews, I do use it. I just did a show where I talked about the smart podcast player. I use that as well. And if you believe in it, then the passion comes through. And if your audience knows, likes, and trusts you, then, and if they have the budget, then they'll go ahead and buy it as well. You just earn a commission on that. I have a weight loss podcast, and I love a thing called the Fitbit. And every time somebody buys one, I make $9. And as a old businessman once told me, pennies make dollars. And when you get enough people doing that, it starts to add up.
Where do you see podcasting going in the next 10 years? What are the trends we kind of need to keep an eye on?
It just keeps growing. I think we're going to be taking over more and more areas. It used to be, you know, 10 years ago, you were kind of tied to a computer to listen to a podcast, and then the iPod came along, and then the iPhone, and now iTunes, and now you don't even have to be connected to a computer now to subscribe to a podcast. And now we're starting to move into cars with technology like Stitcher Radio and Apple. I forget the name of it, the Apple Car, I think, is coming out. where it's going to be in the dashboard. So the car is the next frontier, and right after that, of course, is going to be the living room. And so we're already on things like Roku boxes and Apple TV. It's just not super easy to get it in the living room right now, but it's just going to continue growing. And I know that a recent study came out from Edison Research that said 13 million people now are listening to podcasts every single day, and we're really close to having the same numbers as AM/FM radio. So it's increasing, and it's been going up every single year since it came out in 2004. So it's just going to grow and grow and grow.
That's exciting stuff. And finally, what would you most like other podcasters or other creative people to take away from your experience with School of Podcasting, your podcast, about innovating, creating, and making a difference?
Just to, again, to kind of start, the other thing is you don't have to spend $1,000 to start a podcast, but you are going to have to spend a little money. And it's always kind of odd that people will go out and spend $300 on a bicycle, or they'll buy a, you know, model airplane or a radio-controlled car, and they'll drop a few hundred dollars. But when it's, say, hey, it's time to start a podcast, you're going to reach a global audience, and you're going to find like-minded people, and you're going to have a better connection with your customers, they'll go, is there any way I can do that for free? And you can, and I always tell people, you can paint with peanut butter. I don't really, you know, I wouldn't recommend that, but it could be done. Can I podcast for free? You can, but boy, you're really leaving yourself open for a lot of headaches. So I would say don't try to avoid the free route. You know, there are a lot of ways you can do it. I usually say for the price of an Xbox, you can start a podcast, and most of that is a one-time fee.
Dave, thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much. This is great.
You and I have been listening to podcast coach, consultant, and School of Podcasting founder Dave Jackson. You'll find a lot more great tips and tricks on podcasting on his website, schoolofpodcasting.com, where you can subscribe to a School of Podcasting podcast. Also, if you get a chance, check out on iTunes. Dave has both his Logical Weight Loss podcast and his Marketing Musician podcast. He was not kidding about when he's not podcasting, he's podcasting. And as we celebrate National Podcast Day today and 10 years of podcasting, which doesn't seem possible, check out nationalpodcastday.com for some great information and free resources on podcasting. They're going to be having some special events today, including a How to Podcast on iTunes live stream happening at 6 o'clock Pacific time. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.